might have heard that the Metallica boys were gonna play some heavy shit tonight.
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast. I'm Ethan Luck, and this is yet another episode of Metal Tales from the Road. And today we're going to be talking to our friend Chad Pollock about Boise, Idaho at the Taco Bell Arena. What's up, Chad?
How are you doing?
I'm well, man. And did Taco Bell give out any free burritos or anything the other night?
No, we still call it the Pavilion, which was what it was called when we were kids. So
it's really funny when big corporations like buy up arenas and then change the name. Like there's one in Louisville called the KFC Yum Center. It just sounds silly.
Well, I understand that, you know, you got to do it for money, but still, it's going to be the BSU Pavilion forever.
Right. Yeah. I remember the amphitheater I grew up going to in Orange County was always called Irvine Meadows. And then once Verizon started buying all the amphitheaters up, then it became Verizon Wireless. But yeah, it's always going to be the Irvine Meadows, or like the where the Anaheim Ducks play was always just called the Anaheim Pond.
Right.
And then now it's the Honda Center, but locals now call it the Ponda Center. But anyways, enough about corporate sponsorships. let's give you the people a little idea about you. Okay, you're obviously a listener of the show. You're a patron, a good friend of the show. But let's let the good listeners know kind of your history with Metallica and when you came online with the band.
Well, I'm 46, so like most people my age, I came along line with the One video.
Okay.
So, yeah, I was a butt rock guy before that, and then after that, I found out that you know, there was something better out there.
Agreed.
And so saw, I don't know if it premiered on Henbaker's Ball or what, but it was my gateway.
Yeah, man, that's all. I mean, I've got the same story. You know, I've mentioned it obviously numerous times on the show, but you know, Metallica going on MTV and all of a sudden having a video, and it just exposed them to an audience that they didn't even have. And they had already been very successful, obviously, with the first three records, but this just opened up a huge door up for people like you and I.
Well, you know, I knew who they were, but frankly, you know, I was, like I said, I was into butt rock and people in spandex and all that terrible stuff. And I thought they were just a bunch of dirt bags. So I never gave them a shot.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, they didn't have makeup on. They weren't wearing spandex and they were dressing like ladies. But yeah, I mean, you know, when you look back on that now, now that we're in our 40s, it's like to see the difference of that, see them in the mid 80s looking like they did in comparison to like Motley Crue and Poison and all those bands. It's quite crazy that, I mean, in a world that was so popular that Metallica were able to gain so many fans.
Well, you know, and it's, you don't even really think about it. You're a kid, right? I was a sophomore in high school. To think that those guys that, you know, you were idolizing dressed in spandex and wearing eyeliner were like in their early 20s.
Yeah.
Who does that?
I know. Who does that? I tell you, James, yeah. James does it. James loves it.
Well, he's got, you know, a couple feather boas he stole from Lars, so.
That's right, exactly, yeah, or from Hulk Hogan, his boas. He's got a hefty boa collection of red and white boas. Well, yeah, so that's cool. So Justice was the record you came online. Did you immediately, like myself and so many others, kind of go back in time and pick up the early records?
You know, I did, and was thinking about that, knowing that I was going to get a chance to get on here and give my spiel. And probably, oh, I'd say Kill 'Em All was probably the next one that I listened to the most, and then Ride the Lightning. And frankly, I didn't ever listen to Master of Puppets very much as a kid.
Oh,
I think I'm one of those guys that if it's popular, I don't tend to like it.
Sure.
So, and you'll hear that as I go through my spiel.
So you loved the Black Album, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Wore out four tapes of it.
Okay. So even though it was super popular, you still backed it.
No, so like I said, I'm 46, graduated high school in 91. And so went off to college in Northern Idaho, and it came out like 3 days before I went to college, and everybody had it.
Oh, yeah.
And these people didn't know who the hell Metallica was. Yeah, and it just instantly turned me off.
They thought it was their first record, probably.
Probably. You know, sorority girls screaming, I want to hear Inner Night. So.
Yeah, man. I mean, it really did. It exploded everywhere. I mean, continue on. Like, going to college, I mean, you just saw all these people that had the Black Album and had no idea what they did before this.
Yeah, had absolutely no idea. And so North Idaho, we really were not that far from Seattle. Alice in Chains played our student union ballroom.
Wow.
So, yeah. Sadly, I wasn't there. But,
oh, man.
It's the way it is sometimes.
Of course, yeah.
But I was big into Metallica then, but not so much into the songs themselves. But you know, when the Year and a Half of Life of Metallica came out, I watched the hell out of that video. I loved it.
Absolutely, so, man. I still will watch that from time to time. I've got the DVD. I had the double VHS at one point.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And I stole it from a guy. I was like, "Can I borrow that?" And I just never gave it back. So
sorry, man.
Sorry, Robert.
The tape ran. The tape broke. Sorry, dude.
Yeah. And I still hold that a little bit today. You know, the tuning room stuff that you get, I seem to be mostly interested in seeing that stuff and what's going on there. So
right, exactly. But that was, I mean, that was an era of Metallica too, back in the early 90s, where it was, and maybe a bit before that with like the Seattle 89 stuff in Mexico City. But I mean, A Year and a Half was kind of the I would say the point in the band's career where like they were full on cool with cameras around them all the time. Because ever since then, we've got so much behind the scenes footage from the 90s and 2000s.
Well, it was such a new concept, really, if you think about it. There was nobody doing that. No one that big, anyway.
Right.
You didn't know, you know, Axl Rose, you didn't even know if he was ever going to come on stage. And here these guys are, you know, on, you know, showing you 4 hours of Lars trying to drum something.
Right, exactly, so, yeah.
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 Yeah, it was amazing.
It really was, man. It was so cool. Before we get into the Taco Bell Arena and Boise, Idaho, this is a rotating thing for a lot of people. Do you have a current favorite Metallica album, or has it always been the same all these years?
So, And Justice for All is my favorite album. It's the first one that I got into. It holds a special place in my heart. But with that said, if you go through and look at my musical history, it doesn't make sense, because I'm a guy that likes a lot of bass in my albums.
Oh.
So I couldn't have been more excited when Robert joined the band. I loved Infectious Grooves.
Oh yeah. Infectious Grooves and Suicidal Tendencies were great.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, I know you guys aren't much of a fan of the slap bass, but
you know,
I like it.
You know, honestly,
I'm not going to apologize.
Listen, there's a couple bass players that I think when they do it, I back it. It's not my personal preference when I do play bass or record bass, but I think guys like Flea, like Les Claypool, and Rob Trujillo are guys that when they do it well, and it's just cool when they do it.
Oh yeah, you know, and you know, I'm not one of these guys that wants to hear And Justice for All with bass, because it's just the way that it is.
Right.
And I like it for what it is, but it's just odd that it's my favorite Metallica album and it has the least amount of bass in it. So.
Exactly. Well, the remaster is a little more, has a little more bass to it, not bass guitar, just overall low end tone to the remaster.
Well, apparently I'm going to have to go buy it. I was for sure that I was going to win. So,
well, hey man, it's not too late, man. We're still giving away another one.
Oh really?
Yeah. You haven't heard?
Nice.
Yeah. We're doing two box sets.
Oh, all right, I'm holding off.
Yeah.
I'll save those pennies for some rum then.
And you never know. I mean, we pulled a name for the first one, and as of 2 days ago, we have not heard back from that person. So if they go silent, who knows? Maybe we'll have to give it away again. But
don't tell them their name.
I'm not saying their name on the air. Listen, we already did once, okay? They had their chance, but
I have their original, you know, the box set that came back in the early 2000s that had Kill 'Em All, Ride the Lightning, Creeping Death disc in it.
Right, yeah.
So I have a copy of Injustice for All, but frankly, those recordings in those albums are not very good quality wise.
You mean just in general, like, or those versions you happen to get?
No, like they're bad. Like I had to get a second one. The first one I sent back because it was pressed wrong and it had just a ton of static in it. So,
You know what? Yeah, that can happen a lot when in a vinyl manufacturing plant where every little thing from, like, you know, if there's too much low end on a record, it can cause the needle to skip. So oftentimes, you know, like when I did my vinyl, I had to approve it with the test pressing and played on a couple record players, make sure everything's good. It was probably some oversight on someone's part where they just didn't do their job, and all of a sudden you got a staticky Kill 'Em All.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it sounded worse than the original.
So what's what is currently maybe a favorite Metallica song or two that you can't stop listening to?
I'll probably get a little bit of flack for this, but Here Comes Revenge is my favorite new song right now.
Really? That's awesome. I dig that song.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of the second half of that album, but that song, I don't know, it just does it for me. I like the rhythm. I like the guitar squeal or whatever it is at the beginning. So, yeah.
Man, you know, the second side of Hardwired, often we hear that a lot of people prefer the side A. I guess there's four sides if you buy the vinyl, but whatever, second half.
Right.
I've been diving into the second half more and more, and I'm digging it more. I'm still not a huge Murder One fan, but I mean, for me, Am I Savage is a highlight for the second half of the record.
Yeah, you know, it's to me, the overall album's just a little long. I love it, and we'll go into it as we talk through the set list here. There's just a couple handful of songs that they think that they could have taken off and had a stronger single album.
Sure.
But I know that I wouldn't have gotten Here Comes Revenge. So.
Yeah, that might not have made the cut. You never know.
Well, clearly, you know, and it's strange. And I was hoping that after they took the break that we would get something new, that they might have sent everybody home with some homework and come up with something new for this leg, but we haven't heard it yet. So,
right,
but I
yeah.
was hoping.
Yeah. I just did a Metal Tales yesterday for the Vegas show. And we talked about how it was kind of a safe set list. Whenever they come back from a bit of a break, it's almost like they kind of ease into it, do the safe songs, do what they're most comfortable with. And then after a few weeks, then they start throwing in like the No Leaf Clovers, the Unforgiven Threes and stuff like that.
Yeah, and so I was looking back, you know, I was, you know, keeping an eye on what was going on and what we were going to get. And looking back at, you know, this is the fourth time I've seen them. So I was looking back to see what I'd seen before or what I'd heard before and was wondering if I was going to get anything new or unique. So,
well, you just answered my next question. I was going to ask you how many times you've seen the band. So this is number four for
you?
Yeah,
so, number four. So first time I saw them was early September of 89.
Wow. Great year to see Metallica. Jeez.
Yeah. So I saw him on the Damaged Justice tour with Faith No More opening. Now, mind you, I had no idea who Faith No More was, and Mike Patton screamed like he always did, and I had no idea what he said the entire time. But
right.
I liked it.
That's amazing.
So then I saw him on And Justice for All tour, and then I skipped the Black tour. I had three or four opportunities to see that and chose not to. Yeah.
Too many sorority girls like this record, man. I'm not going.
Yeah, that's a terrible reason to not go see a band. But, you know, it was. I'm not afraid to say that there were too many pedestrian people on the ride for me at that point.
Too many jocks.
Yeah. Yeah, and it, you know, and that's okay. Good for them, and I would think that the world would be a worse place if we didn't have Metallica gain that kind of success. They would obviously probably still be the band that they are today. So,
oh, absolutely.
But I chose to just not go to that. But I was a big fan of Load when it came out. So when that came out, I went to concert 97 here. So was the one where they started off with "So What," that, yeah, that iteration.
Absolutely, man. That's awesome.
And then saw them on the Madly in Anger with You tour.
Okay.
So in 2004.
So you've gotten to see some St. Anger songs live.
Yeah, yeah. A couple of them. What was it? Frantic and St. Anger.
Yeah.
So I have the soundboard of that, and I went back and listened to it maybe a year ago.
Yeah.
And it's a little rough, but I thought it was a great concert. I was up in the middle bowl. They seemed to have a lot of energy, and they were. It was a very enjoyable concert.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I mean, I was just talking about this yesterday on the other Metal Tales episode that, you know, as much slack as I've given St. Anger over the years, you know, I have grown to like a few songs, and I wouldn't mind seeing a Frantic or some kind of Monster on this tour.
Oh, I would. Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see more varied set lists for this tour, but I get it. I understand. It's a production.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's a total production. And, I mean, the good thing is, compared to the stadium run, we are getting a little bit more of a deep cut friendly set list from time to time. Because at the stadium run, they gotta just do the hits. It's a stadium tour, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, Clint would be disappointed to know that I didn't get to see I Disappear live.
Ooh, yeah. He loves that song.
And then they played The Wait, which is a great song for their encore.
Wow, that's cool. The Wait, that's a deep cut.
Yeah, absolutely. I was hoping for the Small Hours, but I'll take The Wait.
Yeah, you can't be too picky if they're going to play something off of Garage Days. I mean, obviously they've done Last Caress so many times, but all those other tunes they rarely ever do.
Right. Yeah, and so. Yeah, I thought that actually the set list that I went and saw that was the best one. So
that's awesome, man. Well, let's kind of dive into your day in Boise. Did you partake the night before? Did you know of a pre-party or did you go to one?
No, I did not go to one. I don't know if there was one or not. I frankly sat at home and had a few cocktails.
Sounds like a pre-party to me.
Yeah, there was a pre-party. I just didn't invite anybody but my wife and a buddy.
That's right, yeah.
So no, there wasn't anything that I knew of that was going on. So it was just a, you know, fairly typical evening. And then I worked, I own a business here in town, so I worked all day on yesterday. And then a little different than most of the people that you've had on here. You know, I don't own a black ticket.
Right.
I've only seen him four times, and I took my wife, who's a recovering hippie, who does really she does really like your new album, so thank you.
Oh, my new record?
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, that's cool, man.
Yeah, so I took her, and then I have a couple buddies that are real casual fans. So I was kind of on the more pedestrian side of things of the people that I was going with. I had a buddy
I would have gotten to the arena and been like, see you later. I'm going to go hang out with the crews. You go find the sorority section.
I got a little story for you on that as we get into
okay,
it.
Okay.
So,
I'm getting ahead of ourselves here.
That's all right. Anyway. So we just went out and had dinner beforehand, and I knew that Jim went on at 7:30. So we wrapped up dinner about 7:30. I got one of my buddies that I brought with us. It's got a bad ankle, but refuses to do anything but buy floor tickets. So I was trying to limit his standing time.
Right.
And that was fine. And it wasn't, you know, I had an idea of what to expect from Jim. And so we got there at 7:45 or so.
Okay.
Just about the time that they're up in the upper bowl, giving out tickets down to the floor. So,
okay, cool.
Yeah. So
what were your thoughts? I mean, I know you've probably, seen some stuff online of what you saw of Jim Brewer. How'd you feel about it?
I like it. I like the concept. All the things that you hear about the neutering that they do for opening bands, not necessarily Metallica, but other people that, it's really rare that an opening band sounds good enough for me to really want to spend an extra 2 hours on my feet with a bunch of sweaty dudes around me.
Right. I'm with you minus the sweaty dudes part. I can hang out with them.
So no, I liked it. The crowd was into it. It was I'd say if the Taco Bell arena holds 13,000 people, there were probably 12. So it wasn't sold out, but there were a lot of people for sure.
Yeah, I mean, for Boise, Idaho too, I mean, it's not a huge city. I mean, if aside from maybe, you know, what's the main part of the population, like the college?
No, Californians moving here.
Oh, are they?
Oh yeah. No, we have, you know, there's a pretty good tech industry here. There's a million people. So,
oh, that's awesome.
And the whole, we call it the Treasure Valley. So it's Boise in the surrounding cities.
Well, I underestimated the population. My apologies. I love Boise. Yeah, I've been through Boise quite a bit over the years. I've played at the, what's it called? The knitting factory.
Yeah. Yep. In fact, it caught fire not too long ago from a guy doing HVAC work there.
Oh wow!
And yeah, and so they've been down and out for a little while.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah, but we've got some other clubs around here that have picked it up, and they'll do fine once they get back open. And them having to spread out the music has probably done a good thing for the valley.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. It's a fun town for sure. It's kind of a college town. I don't know why I have a vivid memory of eating at P.F. Chang's there. I've eaten in a lot of places in Boise, but for some reason I remember a P.F. Chang's.
Yeah, no, there is. It's right by the knitting factory. So
yeah, it's probably why I went
within
one.
Walking distance of where you go when you're around there to eat. So
yeah, that's awesome. So let's continue on with your, you guys get to the, Jim Brewer's already doing his thing. Did you go buy any merch or anything? Or were you waiting afterwards, or did you get anything at all?
I didn't get anything at all. I'm not much of a concert t-shirt wearer, though. I really wanted one of the posters. You know, they're doing the specific posters for each
right.
show. And it was awesome. I thought it was a great looking poster, but I just didn't want to manhandle it the whole time I was watching the show.
Yeah,
so
you could probably get it online here soon, too.
That's what I figured I would do. In fact, they released a specific Boise t-shirt that I don't think you could get on or at the venue today at the merch store. So
it
combines the Boise State logo and some Metallica horns. So
oh, that's awesome.
That's kind of cool.
I definitely have to get whatever Nashville specific stuff they do, probably a t-shirt and a poster. I'm definitely going to grab those at the show here. I'm kicking myself for not grabbing anyone from Detroit. I got a Philly Metallica Philly shirt when I went to that show last year.
Nice.
God, 2 years.
Well, like, yeah. Was that 2 years already almost?
Holy crap. Yeah. Well, a year and a half.
You forget when you get lost, huh?
It's called getting old, dude. I just turned 40 last month, and I'm just forgetting everything now.
Well, I tell you, 46 doesn't feel any better.
Sweet. Looking forward to it. So let's maybe dive in. And if there's anything else you want to talk about pre-set list, maybe we can jump into that.
Yeah. So, we got there and we had, floor tickets, and I knew that there was a, you know, side of the floor that was going to be busier than the other side of the floor. And, decided that I wanted to hang out mostly by the sound booth, probably just to make it easier to hang out, and hopefully that it would sound pretty good there.
Yeah, that's so always a good call when you're looking for a spot. If you're not concerned about getting close, go as close to the sound booth as you can, because that's where you're getting the best mix that Big Mick is putting out there.
You know, and this may be the first concert I've been to that I can think of that I was on the floor where there were no amps, that it was just all PA.
Right.
And and as we get into it, I don't know how other people that are up against the rail think other shows sound like, but I thought that this sounded pretty bad when you were two or three people away from the rail.
Okay, yeah. I mean, a lot of that might have to do, I mean, you know, when they hang PA in these arenas, you know, you'll see it kind of hanging down, then it kind of comes out at an angle to almost point somewhat straight down to the crowd.
Right.
So if you're right on the rail or around that area, like you might not be getting the full effect of what's coming out of those speakers. You know, oftentimes it's better to stand back a little bit But it's a trade-off, yeah, you know. Sound good, sound bad. I can see I could be right next to Hetfield or whatever. It's a tough call.
Right. So I bounced around a little bit, but ended up where we started, which was right by the sound booth. Was lucky enough. I had got a buddy that lives here in town that just leads a charmed life and somehow weaseled his way backstage. And so I ended up getting to meet and talk to Jim Brewer for a little bit after, well, actually it was during the concert. So,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So I got to take a little tour of the soundboard and that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was pretty, yeah. So it was pretty sweet.
You just casually dropped that juicy detail on us. And then I met Jim Brewer.
Yeah. You know, doesn't everybody?
Did I forget to tell you that me and Hetfield arm wrestled last night? It was so fun.
No. It was an Indian leg wrestle.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. He's good at that one.
Oh yeah. What a bear.
Yeah, seriously.
So, anyway, you know, that, so that's where we ended up hanging out. And I thought the sound there was as good as it was going to be for being on the floor.
Yeah, for sure, man. So I kind of bring this up every time I do a Metal Tales episode, but you obviously know, you know, when you hear the AC/DC tune, you know that the set list is coming.
I do, and so I texted my wife and said, hurry up with the beer. Next song is it's on.
Hurry up with the beer, woman.
Yeah, yep.
It's funny, like, when you go to a Metallica show and look around, and when the AC/DC tune is playing, you look around and there's people that are, like, freaking out, like, oh, my God, yes. And then you can tell the casual fans because they're going to get beer during that part.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, you know, so having three real casual people with me, I didn't spoil anything for them, but I liked that I was able to say, okay, you're going to enjoy this next part. Or, yeah. Or, you know, like I told Brooke, hey, you know, next song, this next song they're on. So
that's awesome. Yeah, you're almost like an insider.
A little bit.
You're like, hey, I know what this next song is going to be. Check this out. Or, yeah. Hey, I'll bet you $10 they open with the Ecstasy of Gold.
Right. Yeah.
You're on, man.
Yeah.
Well, cool. So are you kind of like myself and so many others when, even though they've been using Ecstasy of Gold as their intro for so many years, are you, you still kind of get chills and get that excitement that they're about to come out?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. What I was surprised at this time, and maybe just paying a little bit more attention, knowing that I was going to get a chance to talk to you guys, was that how late they wait to come out into that song.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And just the composition of that song alone is what builds suspense too. You know, it's the way that it was written is like that, that it builds the suspense and this anticipation. And they do wait till the very end almost where it's like this big crescendo happens. And then all of a sudden it's like, what's happening? And then all of a sudden, boom, they're on stage.
Yeah. And I wish that they wouldn't do the Hardwire intro after that. I wish that they would just come straight into a song, but you know, that's, yeah, I understand why.
I see that. I could see that. Yeah. Or I wish, I mean, if they're going to play Hardwired, like, don't do the tape thing. Just come right into the thing where you come in after the Hardwired tape.
Yeah, exactly. Cause it's like, you know, that song has such the Ecstasy of Gold is got a big crescendo there at the end. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Then all of a sudden you have the drums, the tape for the drums that just doesn't quite hold the meat that the Ecstasy of Gold does.
Yeah. I feel on that one. I mean, I'm not one to complain about a Metallica show ever, but I mean, if you were to nitpick it, sure. Like if I was like their musical director, I'd be like, all right, listen, boys, let's drop this tape thing. I think it'd be much more impactful if you came in on this part right after the Ecstasy of Gold and blah, blah, blah. Crowd goes wild. Pyro, boom.
Yeah. And they say, here, Ethan, is your bus ride back home.
Exactly. Yep. Have you heard of Greyhound?
Yeah, because exactly. You're not getting a bus that nice.
The long ride from Boise to Nashville.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's easy to sit around and be an armchair quarterback. But, you know, I was excited to see Hardwired to Self-Destruct is not there's some songs on there that I like, but probably not my favorite album.
Sure.
But with that said, I thought that Hardwired going into Atlas Rise sounded really good live. I was very pleased with how all the Hardwired songs sounded live and how they played and frankly how they mixed in with all the other music.
Yeah, man, agreed. I mean, they've been playing a lot of stuff off Hardwired throughout the set. It's not just like two or three songs. And I mean, especially Hardwired into Atlas Rise, they've been doing this the entire World Wired tour.
Right. And that was one song, Atlas Rise was, yeah, that's one of the songs I don't, it's a skipper for me on the new CD.
Really?
Well, yeah.
Wow.
But I'll listen to it on the album because it's too tough to move the needle.
Yeah, exactly. You got to be so precise. You're like, well, I guess I'll listen to this crappy song.
Well, and that's actually how I listen to most of my music anyway, because it takes the ADD out of it.
And we're old.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I thought that Hardwired into Atlas was awesome. My casual friends, you know, Brooke didn't know who those two songs.
Sure.
And my other buddies didn't either, but they were totally into it. And I thought that it was a great crowd opener. And then going from those two into something that everybody knows, like Seek and Destroy.
Yeah, that's cool.
It was great timing.
And it's cool they're putting it. They've been putting it back towards the top of the set list because they were closing out the main set with that for the stadium run. So it's cool,
right,
to have an old school thing at the beginning, you know, and going from that into what's now a rotating slot too.
Well, you know, those guys they're smart. You know, they know that Seek and Destroy has been a crowd pleaser for a lot of years.
Right.
And, you know, so you get casual fans that are, okay, I didn't know that song. God, am I going to get any song that I know? And then bam.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, I thought it was awesome.
And then there's the casual fans that are like, when are they going to play Inner Sandman? I want to hear Nothing Else Matters and I Disappear.
Easy on the I Disappear comment. I like that song.
Hey, I've dogged it before, but I've gone back and listened to it, and I'm realizing that I was kind of mistaken. Like, it is a good song, so forgive me, everybody.
No.
So
where did we go from there?
So Seek and Destroy, then it's become a rotating slot. We had The Memory Remains.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so one of my buddies is a huge Load Reload fan that I was with, and so I thought based on what we were going to get at, or what we saw at Vegas, that we would get that. So yeah. I was excited that they played that for him. And I think it's a good crowd participation song.
Yeah, man. I would love to get this one at the Nashville show.
Yeah, and it sounds great live.
Yeah, awesome. Well, and that whole ending thing with the da 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 is like, it's such a good crowd moment, like gives you chills when you sing along with the band too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, it's just one of those moments where you can look at measure a band's success by the fact that if they wanted the crowd to sing that for another minute, they mm-hmm. would have.
Oh yeah,
it went long than it normally does, you know, for the song. But and then you know, it just kept going. They would have just kept telling us to go, we would have gone.
Oh yeah, exactly. No, they can command a crowd, and if James tells you to keep singing, you're going to keep singing. Like, sir, yes, sir.
Absolutely.
So going to the Unforgiven, which is a staple at this point. Anything notable during this one, or is it kind of just a good classic Unforgiven?
Well, it's a couple notable things about it. First is that it has the tape intro, and it's
horn,
apparently
yeah.
this, yeah. Well, and it's the tape intro, and it. I was going, okay, are we going to get Unforgiven 2? Are we going to get The Day That Never Comes? You know, I didn't think that we would get Unforgiven because it has that. There's a tape intro, and it's something I had never heard before. But
so it's not the intro from the record with the horn and the snare drum.
No, oh. No. There's like a 30-second prelude in there of something that you could probably go into a couple different songs with.
Interesting. And okay.
Yeah, at least to me it was that way. Now there's probably some of those guys that have seen them 187 times that think that Chad doesn't know what the hell he's talking about.
Yeah, the dude I talked to yesterday, this guy Nick, Vegas was his 74th show.
Man, that's awesome. I have a lot of respect for people that can take and dedicate that much of their life to something that they love.
It's crazy, man. I wish I could afford to do that.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But I mean, that's not like, there's bands here that I really like in town that I haven't seen 74 times, and they play every Wednesday.
Yeah, I think, you know? I think the only bands I've seen more than like 50 times are bands I've been on tour with, because I have to watch them every night.
Right, exactly. So the Unforgiven was great. I think at that point he pulled out Carl. James did.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's kind of his ballad guitar now.
Yeah. So I was pretty excited to get to see that. That's a, you know, that's got a great story to it.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think that Kirk had a, I think he had, is it his Greenie? Does he play with that on stage?
The old Les Paul that's worth like $500,000? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's been touring with it.
Because it's kind of, it's a pretty light colored Burst, right?
Yeah. I think that's the one. So, Clint knows it more off the top of his head. He got it from, I can't remember, whatever. Don't write in and tell me who you got it from. I'll text Clint after this.
Yeah, it was somebody, and he paid like $1 million for it or some ridiculous thing insane. Like that.
But you know what? Like, I don't know what I would do if, like, I was about to go on tour and I had, like, a huge guitar vault where the guitar is going to be safe and, you know, my tech is on top of it. And if I had a guitar that's worth that much money, it's like, well, I mean, it still should be played, you know. I don't want it to I don't know.
What else are you going to do with your money?
It's like Kirk's going to, like, come up on hard times and have to sell it, you know. He's fine.
Yeah, so, you know, what is he? He's got a house in Hawaii. So, you know, so you can go from a 20,000 square foot house to a 19,000 square foot house.
Yeah, bummer.
You know, and then, yeah. And so, you know, why not put your money in something that you're going to use and that you can appreciate? So,
yeah, very cool.
But anyway, that's at the point where I got to meet Jim Brewer and sit around and talk with him a little bit. So I didn't see much of The Unforgiven, which was fine. It's a good song.
Yeah. Did your Brewer hang bleed over into Now That We're Dead?
No, it did not. Okay. So, whole. I thought it was good live.
Okay.
And I actually liked the first. Well, let me. Here's my take: is that most of the songs on Hardwired to Self-Destruct are a minute or two longer than they need to be, in my opinion. I'm a short song fan for the most part.
Okay.
So I really like the beginning part of that song and the drums. And at this point, my wife was getting ready to go get another beer, and I knew that the drum thing was coming up, and I hadn't seen it online or anything like that. We wanted to see how it was going to fetch out. So
right.
I told her to hang out, and she was excited that I told her to stay because she thought it was really cool.
Oh, so, that's awesome. Okay.
Yeah. So, and I thought it was all right. Where we were on the Lars, and we were closest to Kirk. So he was on the part of the stage, the point of the stage that was closest to us.
Okay, nice.
And, you know, he did his best.
He did his best. You mean on the drum circle part?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you can tell he doesn't really know how to play drums. He's just kind of hitting them. And Rob a bit too. I mean, James can play drums, but
yeah. And see, he was all the way on the other side from us, so I couldn't. Okay. I didn't have a great view of him.
See, myself being a drummer, I can definitely tell when someone doesn't know how to play drums and they're playing a drum.
Right.
I mean, and maybe everyone can tell, but like I just by the way Kirk holds the sticks or something, I'm like, he's not a drummer, but they look like they're having fun, whatever, you know?
Yeah. And that is something to bring up, is that they definitely look like they were enjoying themselves.
Absolutely.
For sure. And along with that, I actually thought that of the four of them last night, that Kirk was probably my favorite of the night. He seemed cool. The most energetic and into it. So, it was, I was surprised by that. I was pleasantly surprised by that.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah. So,
cool.
Yeah, I thought that Now That We're Dead was good. And I didn't, the drum break in the middle, was okay for me. It was good to see them do things that are different, things that, you know, that you won't ever get to see them do again.
Right. Exactly. And I've heard the drum circle thing is a little bit shorter than it was in the stadium run. So
Yeah, maybe a minute. Okay. Maybe two.
That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. Well, so then moving on, this is a great slot, spot in the set. In Vegas, it was three Ride the Lightning songs in a row. And last night in Boise, you get the 1-2 punch of Creeping Death into For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Yeah. And, you know, Creeping Death is, sorry, Clint, is not one of my favorite songs. I put it in my list of songs I don't ever need to hear again.
Wow, dude.
I know.
You're making some, yeah. You're going to make some enemies, man.
Well, I told you I wasn't going to be like everybody else that you'd already talked to.
Hey, dude, it's all good. This is just surprising. I'm just trying to be, I'm just trying to just give you a warning. But you do you, man. If Creeping Death is a song you don't care to hear, then that's totally fine. Is this a go take a leak song or go get another beer song for you?
No, I stayed and watched it. I watched the 40-something moms yell die, die, die. The song itself is probably a fine song. It's a great song, but just the crowd participation with all these people chanting die, you know, that go home and tell their kids to brush their teeth and go to bed. It seems a little it's like me wearing a battle vest. It's just two things that don't go together.
Okay, fair enough. Did your wife, being the hippie that she is, think that they were talking about tie-dyeing shirts?
Yeah, she did. She
DYE.
She thought we were gonna die. Oh, really?
Interesting.
Yeah,
they're kind of hippies too. That's great, honey.
Well, you know, the funny thing was that when Rob came out first, and she says, "Oh, that guy's buff." And I looked at her and I said, "Babe, do you know who that is?" She says, I said, "That's Sarsippius, you dummy." We share a love for Infectious Grooves.
Right.
It's about one of the, yeah. And so she's like, "That's the bass player from that album?" I said, "Yeah." She's like, "Oh, okay. I like his braids." Something, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, I like his muscles.
Yeah. Yeah. So, she thoroughly enjoyed herself.
Cool.
I think she was actually probably out getting a beer during Creeping Death. So this is
three beers now. You're both lush already. We're not even halfway through the set yet, and she's already.
Oh, if you see our beer fridge, you would appreciate the love for Pabst Blue Ribbon at our house.
Oh, nice. I do love a good Pabst. My favorite, I would like to drink a Pabst is if it's so cold, like bottom of the cooler under the frozen ice and water cold.
Camping beer.
Yeah, you know when like the cooler's like kind of starting to melt a little bit, but it's freezing cold underneath that layer of ice and there's a Pabst down there? That's the one I want.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, my wife hasn't met a Pabst Blue Ribbon that she didn't love, so.
Well, God bless her.
Yeah, she's a great woman. I'm the luckiest man alive.
It's America's beer.
Yes, absolutely.
So do you have the same feelings for Whom the Bell Tolls as you do Creeping Death?
No, I love For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Okay, whew. I was nervous there for a second.
Damn it, why wasn't it Trapped Under Ice?
I hate Creeping Death and For Whom the Bell Tolls and fuck Blackened.
No, like I said earlier, that how much I'm like bass guitar, that song really does it for me. So yeah,
man.
Yep,
it's a classic, Crab Walk and all.
It was like Grab Ass last night, and I don't know if
is
they
Kirk,
do that all
is
the
Kirk
time.
Still chasing him around and does the crab walk?
Yeah,
it's like their little thing, like they play tag or something.
Yeah, exactly. So. You know, and I like to see those moments where they're having fun on stage. Yeah. So it didn't bother me. And I actually would have liked to have seen a little bit more of the crab walk. I like it. I think it's cool. It's who he is. And, you know, I'm probably a Rob fan the most in that band. So
yeah, that's cool, man. I mean, I'm not going to argue with that.
Yeah. I was excited to see that.
Awesome. Well, so the next slot has also become a rotating slot where it's one of the two kind of ballads, like Sanitarium or Fade to Black. And in Vegas, it's Fade to Black. And you got to see Sanitarium, which I hope I get to see.
And I was excited that was the song that we got to hear, because not that I like Fade to Black too, but I was just wanting something I was excited to be surprised and not know what I was going to get.
Right.
So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's I don't think I've ever seen that song live. So it was good to see live. They sounded really good.
Awesome. Yeah. It's one of my favorite Metallica songs. Sometimes I think I like it better than Fade to Black, you know, they're both amazing, amazing songs, but, yeah, I really hope we get Sanitarium at one of the few shows we're going to. But this is when I saw Metallica post the set list on Instagram. I saw this. It's been coming out a little bit lately. You got the Four Horsemen.
Was definitely a shocker. I didn't expect to get that at all.
Yeah.
I was excited, and the crowd was pretty stoked to hear it.
It better be.
Yeah, exactly. So, so it was good. They sounded tight. I would, you know, that it's just one of those songs that I could hear them play every night and would be perfectly fine with.
Oh, I agree. 100%, man.
Yeah.
I'm for it. We'll start a petition. So Fuel, this is becoming a little bit more of a staple in the stadium run. They would rotate it out, but the last two shows they've done Fuel. And I mean, this to me is one of the best translated to live songs Metallica has,
you know, and it is because it's one of my least favorite Metallica songs.
There it is.
But I really was excited that we got to see it live. My buddy that loves the Load Reload era, I was super excited for him to get to see it live. And the pyro that they add to it, is, you know, adds it all, you know, adds a bit of excitement to it.
Absolutely.
It translates well live too. You know, I mean, it's just one of those songs. It's fast. James obviously likes it. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
he
totally.
Maybe puts a little bit more effort into it. It might do something more for him. So
right, yeah. I like a couple years ago on festivals and stuff, and James would come out on stage and be like, "Hey, we got an announcement to make," and like, you know, the crowd's like listening, like, "Oh, what's this announcement?" And he would just go, "Give me fuel, give me fire." You know, I don't know if you remember that or not, but it was really cool.
Well, there was something similar to this. He's like, I have a question to ask you guys, but I can't remember what it is, or something like that.
So he's kind of doing that. You know, that's cool.
Dad joke number 4 or 5 so far.
Total
so, yeah,
dad joke.
It was good. Oh yeah, yeah.
Hey, you got nothing.
Think I figured out that this is the point where and why Lars is losing his hair. Because of the fire, man. It was hot.
Yeah,
you know,
it
we
is.
Were back at the soundboard, and Brooke looked at me and she says, "How the hell hot do you think the drummer is right now?"
Yep. Oh yeah, man, I'm sure it's. I mean, I've been fairly close to pyro like that, and it hurts. It really does.
Yeah, yeah, I bet it does.
But when you're someone like Lars Ulrich and you're behind the kit and you're at this point playing song number 11 in your set, your adrenaline is going so much that, like, I'm sure you still feel it. It's still hot, but you probably don't react to it as if you were just standing there and didn't know it was going to happen.
Right.
And if you're ever standing there and all of a sudden a flame shoots out of the ground, I would run. It's probably a gas leak, so be careful.
Yeah, well, at a sidebar real quick, we were talking on the walk back to the car, and one of my buddies says, oh, it's so funny, he says, "Man, it would suck if you were standing in the wrong spot and one of those flames went off sometime."
You're like, you have no idea.
"Are you serious?" He says, "Well, yeah, that would be terrible." I said, "You don't remember the whole James Hetfield burning his arm off, basically?"
Right,
says,
yeah.
"No, I think maybe I do remember a little something about that."
Yeah, just a little,
like,
something.
Yeah. Wow. Like I said, casual fans, you know, happy that they went.
Totally, but, yeah. You immediately got home and, like, sent him a YouTube link, like, "Watch this, motherfucker."
Yeah, exactly. Listen to the strings pop.
Yeah, totally. all right, so moving along, we got Moth Into Flame next. How do you feel about Moth Into Flame?
I like that song. That's one of my more favorite songs on the new album.
Okay, cool. And I was nervous again.
I call it new, but it's not that new. I mean, what is it? 2.5 years old? Three years old now?
Just hit 2 years old like a couple weeks ago.
Okay. So, yeah, that's one of my favorite songs on that album. Yeah, and our poster was based off of that.
Cool.
It was a moth with a skull holding a like an old TV.
Okay, so, nice.
Yeah.
How'd you feel about the drones?
I was a little disappointed. None went rogue. I was hoping to see one shoot up into the crowd.
Did Kirk bat me away?
No. I think that they stayed away from his weave, so he was okay.
I'll bet he got a talking to from production after that. Like, hey, man, look, these things are like $5,000 a piece or whatever they cost. Like, can you not bat it out of the sky with your guitar?
Yeah, exactly. And you know the one thing that I think that there's like 3 sets that go during the show. So they have relatively short flight time.
Right. Yeah. It's a really cool part of the production on this tour, man. I mean, when I first saw a video of them doing that in Europe, I was just like, holy crap. Like I've seen drones at shows to get camera footage and stuff for like the video feed, but I've never seen like a synchronized drone dance happening. Like it was, I think it's very innovative, you know, for a band like Metallica to do that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, and they're, you know, 6 inches apart from each other and they're all obviously speaking to each other. And so, it added a lot to the song and it was probably a highlight in the production.
Yeah.
Back at Sanitarium when they had the cubes where it was like people trying to push out of them, that was a pretty good trick for the cubes.
Right.
It was a nice visual.
Yeah, there's all sorts of cool stuff they put on the cubes, you know, during Seek and Destroy. It's like old concert tickets from like back in the day, things like that, you know, old photos and the cube thing. I mean, the cubes, the drones, it's such a cool, unique setup for a metal band to do. And I think the In the Round thing, it really complements it since they're in the center of the arena.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you being so connected to, to touring and working with Kings. So you take something like that Metallica has, they're probably not going to do that for more than a cycle, maybe a cycle or two.
Right.
What do they do with that when they're done? Right. I mean, do they auction them off to people like Chris Burgess who buys 4 of them and hangs them over his bed?
Chris would do that.
What?
Wouldn't he? No, honestly, a lot of that stuff, like a production company will provide those things. So you're going to rent certain things. Like Metallica probably doesn't own the PA that's being hung every day. They don't own the lights. The cubes are probably from a production company. It's kind of rare that a band owns all that kind of stuff to tour with. You know, they work with an audio company. I'm not sure who they use, but with Kings, they use a company called Eighth Day Sound. So Eighth Day Sound will basically provide all the PA and have it on a truck, and all their techs will come out and set that up. So there's probably a production company that they have out on the tour that own those drones and programmed it all and set it all up for them. So,
wow, that'd be an awesome job to have.
Yeah, yeah, I'm the drone drone tech. We're out on the Metallica tour right now.
Yeah, you know, I have to go to National Guard every 1 week in a month.
Right, exactly.
go fly drones over in Afghanistan, but you know, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays I fly them for Metallica.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
So if the production company owns those, then you think so? There's a chance we could see them on the Mega Dave cruise.
It's a very, very, very big possibility that Megadave has seen Meat Moth in a Flame. He's like, I got to do that too. I want to have it on Hangar 18.
Are they leaving? I wonder if they're leaving from Dock 18. I mean, that's really what I want to know.
Oh, I hope they are.
See, I told you I like Hetfield's bad dad jokes.
Yeah, I'm a fan of bad dad. I'm not even a dad, and I tell dad jokes. So. So moving on to the set, the last 6 here have been kind of a staple for a good while. With the exception of Where Spit Out the Bone Is, they started to rotate it on the last leg with Battery and Blackened. But next we got Sabbath True. I mean, your thoughts on
this? It's a
great
song.
Yes.
Well, it's a great song. You know, I don't know. It's just hard to explain how that song makes, how it makes you feel when it's live versus just seeing it, you know, or listening to it, you know, seeing a video or watching, you know, on the MTV back in the day. It's just,
yeah.
I don't know. It's a great song. It translates really well live. And so, you know, I knew I was going to see it, and was not disappointed in the least.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, each time I've seen Sabbath True, at no point am I thinking like, I wish they would have played something else. I'm just like, fuck yeah, Sabbath True.
Well, you know, but if I was putting my own, you know, if you know, you won the lottery and could pay Metallica to come play your backyard kegger, it's not a song I would put on there. But it's a song that's so good live that it would be a mistake for me not to.
Right, exactly. Man, I would love if Metallica played my backyard. Pretty awesome. Did you ever see, I think it was a few years back when the Foo Fighters did like this contest thing and they played people's garages?
Oh, I heard about it. I don't think I saw any
it's
part of
cool.
that, though.
You can go on YouTube and watch all the performances and like the making of kind of thing. It was really cool. And they literally show up at someone's house, set up in their garage, and they invite all their friends over and have a house party.
That'd be awesome.
It's so cool. So Sabbath
True. Taylor did all my cocaine. Where did he go?
Where the heck is it? So moving on to one of many they can never not play, the song One.
And I tell you, it's one that they should quit playing.
That's what you think?
It sucked.
Really?
It absolutely, yeah. I loved that song. It's a song that got me into the band. And I don't hold it in necessarily a higher regard than any other song that I've heard. But
so do they perform it bad?
Yeah, they perform it bad. I don't know if someone's guitar was just completely out of tune, but the slow parts were just not, it just didn't mesh with each other very well.
Right. Well, I know that, I mean, in the past, you know, Kirk has had a bit of a history of having this really weird guitar tone happening on those clean leads, and it makes it sound like he's out of tune. Or maybe he just was out of tune. I don't know.
I don't know. It could be, but man, it sounded like he was stepping on a cat for the wah pedal.
Wow.
I didn't like it at all.
Okay. Yeah. You heard it here first, folks. Chad Pollock hates One.
No, I hate One live. Like I said, I don't like Sad But True, but I thought it was awesome live. So,
you heard it here first. Know. Chad Pollock, his favorite record is not And Justice For All anymore. It's Lulu.
I love Lulu. Are you kidding me?
There's no way you love Lulu.
Whenever I want the house to myself, I just put it on and everybody leaves.
That'd be a good room clearer, that's for sure. Okay, so since One was a disaster, apparently, how was Master of Puppets?
Oh, it was good. Like I said, that's never been my favorite album, but they can't not play that song. I would be more excited to go to a concert and them not play it just to hear the reaction of people. But they play it well. Obviously,
man,
it's a good song live.
I think, you know, if they're going to start doing some more deep cuts thrown in here, like they're not going to get rid of Master of Puppets, but we've gotten little glimpses. I want some Death Magnetic on this tour.
Well, yeah, I tell you, I would have loved to have heard Cyanide.
Cyanide, The Day That Never Comes. I mean,
oh yeah.
End of the Line would be great. It's such a
good
record.
I'm not, the first three songs on that album don't do much for me, but from four on back, I like it.
You're an interesting dude with your taste, man. I'm not dogging you at all. I'm genuinely surprised. Like the first like three tracks on Death Magnetic are like some of my favorites. It's so weird.
Well, they're hard, heavy, fast songs, but first to start with, the production on that album really just put me in a spot of not enjoying it to begin with.
I get that. I get that.
And then the Barky James stuff that he does really, I don't like it all that much. But on those first three songs, and what I remember most about that album when I think about it, is how much he just repeats himself over and over and over.
There is a lot of repetitive lyrics on that record, yes.
Yeah, and I don't like it. You know, what don't kill you make you more strong. Okay, I get it.
That is, yeah, that's
like I got it the fourth time.
Yeah, that's one of the weaker lines of the record. I totally understand that. I think that record is, now that record's 10 years old, that record has definitely grown on me.
Sure.
I mean, I didn't dislike it when it came out. Coming from Saint Anger, I was like, oh, sweet baby Jesus, thank you, Metallica's back. But yeah, there are production flaws
to it. I didn't throw Saint Anger out the window like you did, but it certainly wasn't one that I listened to very often. I liked Frantic. I liked Saint Anger.
Yeah.
Dirty Window, to me, is an amazing song.
Dirty Window's cool.
And I love Sweet Amber. So.
Really? Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Hey, man. This is your metal opinion. It's okay. So we get into Encore World here. Were you hoping to get Spit Out the Bone, or are you hoping for something else?
So I was really excited to know that I was going to get, you know, when I heard the intro tape, that I was going to get Spit Out the Bone. But I have you seen it live? You haven't seen it live yet,
no,
have you?
Just on like YouTube and stuff or Instagram.
And I would love to hear what other people. It was the only time in the night where I felt like there was some added help from Big Mick.
Okay.
Yeah, I felt like that they were playing to a backing track.
Hmm. Interesting.
I don't know. It could be just me, but it just didn't sound the same as all the other songs.
Okay. I mean, there's a chance. I mean, there's some production tricks you could do. I don't know if those dudes would play it of actual backing tracks. That would require Lars to play to a click track, which I mean, he does fluctuate his tempo. So especially on a song like this, it does kind of go up and down. So maybe he was doing something, some kind of vocal doubler or, I don't know.
No, it felt more in the music than in the singing.
Okay.
I don't know if they just harmonized the guitars a bunch to layer them on each other. But it just sounded like more than what they were playing.
Sure. Fair enough.
So
yeah, it could have been some guitar effect. I have no idea. I'll text James after we're done here and ask him what he did.
Okay.
Yeah.
And since you know him so well, I got a question for you on that afterwards.
Yeah, definitely. Let me know after we're done here, and I'll ask it to James. So the last two, of course, this is what they always close with: Nothing Else Matters and Enter Sandman. How did you feel about these?
They're good songs. I thought that the tone for Nothing Else Matters was really good. I like that song. Okay. It's not one that I listen to a whole lot, but I understand why they play it. It's a great piece of their history.
Absolutely.
James sounded great. They sounded great through most of it. Like I said, I thought that the sound on the floor wasn't spectacular, but they sounded good.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's Nothing Else Matters is one of those songs that for a long time, I didn't really listen to it and maybe even neglected to listen to a lot of the Black album. But recently, I've been kind of diving head first back into the Black album. Even today, before we started recording this, I was just kind of bored and I was playing guitar and kind of figuring out some guitar parts on Through the Never that I never really learned before. And I was
right.
Like, man, what a fun record, man. It's so cool. For their biggest selling record, one of the best selling records of all time, like this record still more than holds up production-wise, performance, everything.
Well, you know, despite what I think about, you know, frat boys and sorority girls listening to it too much and not being true fans, and there's a reason that that album sold that many records.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's that good. It's still that good.
It's still that good. And, so, I mean, that record came out and had to battle, like, Nirvana and that whole Seattle sound, too.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they quickly became, you know, a band on their own island at that point, because there wasn't anybody that was doing what they did that could sustain that level of success and be that big.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's, you know, despite everything, you know, all the negative things you can say about that album changing from the other ones, it is an awesome album.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. So closing us out, we got Enter Sandman. They're always going to close with this, even though it'd be cool to see something else, I think, from time to time. But this is the crowd pleaser. You know, this is like this is for the people that were there the whole time going like, I don't know any of these songs. I don't know what is this? Atlas what? What's Moth? Yeah. There's a song about a moth.
Well, you know, you guys have said that before in some of your metal tales, but isn't this the first? I mean, they haven't been closing with this song for all that long, have they? I know that, like, when they came here on the Death Magnetic tour, which I skipped, I think they closed with Seek and Destroy.
Right.
They probably played it as an encore, but not the final song.
Yeah, I mean, but it's always going to be towards the end, if not the end. I mean, I know during the Black Album era, they would actually, I just had like a total old man brain fart.
That's all right.
The Black Album era, I know they would, you know, back then open with it because it was like their new record, new song, the way they're doing with Hardwired on this tour.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, when you go and if you follow it all or see the set list that like Guns N' Roses is playing now, you know, do they open with Welcome to the Jungle or do they throw it in second, third song?
Right.
Just to get it out of the way. I like varied set lists. And I think that Guns N' Roses is a great example of the fact that you can play your big hits early and people are going to stick around.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely. Just for fun, while we were talking, I went on to setlist.fm and just typed in Metallica 2008. So it was around the, you know, Death Magnetic era. And you're right. Back then, they weren't putting in the encore. I just pulled up a random show in Oakland, and they were closing the main set with it. And then they come back and do this show, for instance, in Oakland was Last Caress, Whiplash, and Seek and Destroy.
Right.
So, but yeah, still going to be towards the end, I guess. So.
Sure.
Well, there you have it, folks. There's the set list. If you weren't in Boise last night.
And don't come here. We don't need any more of you people.
But there's a great P.F. Chang's there you got to check out, man.
Fried you rice. Just like it because you can see the underside of the horse, Ethan.
It's true. And the fried rice is to die for. Well, Chad, thank you so much for being a part of this, man. We really appreciate it. What the heck? I can't even talk today. Who does this? We appreciate you being a patron and a listener of the show. And everyone, thanks you for giving us your insights to the show in Boise.
Well, we appreciate what you guys have done and started. It's great to have somebody talk about one of our favorite bands weekly and in such a way that it's not boring or know that it's going to only last for a year. You guys spool up Monday morning and have moved to be the first podcast I listen to during the week. So
awesome.
Thank you.
Hey, man.
Thank you.
Hey, our pleasure. I speak on behalf of Clint as well. yeah, this little podcast that could look what happened. We're almost at 2 years, and you know all these listeners. It's pretty crazy. It's been a wild ride. Well, cool. Well, thanks again, dude. And we will talk soon. And everybody else, we'll see you later. Hey, this is Ethan and Clint from Metal Up Your Podcast, and we want to talk to you about something we love called Patreon.
That's right. Patreon is a way for fans of the show to give back to the show, to donate money that helps us in quality and content. And not only that, but we've actually come up with all sorts of fun incentives to give back to you for supporting the show.
Exactly. For instance, if you donate $5 or more, you get access to Cover Our World Blackened, which is the official Metal Up Your Podcast Metallica cover EP.
That's right, and that's the only way to get it. In addition to the EP, we also give you priority email access, meaning we'll read your email first on the show. We give you early access to Patreon-exclusive merchandise, Patreon-exclusive giveaways, and any other side projects Ethan and I might be involved in.
There's all sorts of things you can look at on there and you can donate to. Go check it out, patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. How do you spell that, Clint?
patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. And if you really think about it, $5 a month for an entire year, that's really just like a cup of coffee a month. So go check it out. Thanks, everyone. Peace.
Adios.